Hi everyone, welcome to Modern Workplace Conversations, where we explore critical and often under-discussed topics within the professional world. Every week, we feature experts ranging from HR professionals to operators to lawyers and CEOs to provide you with diverse perspectives on workplace issues, strengths, and best practices. I'm Oluwani Femi Kolawole, Senior Editor, TechPoint Africa. How well do you know the Nigerian work landscape? Today, we are unpacking data-driven insights on crucial questions. What does the data reveal about AI adoption in the workplace? Are people being compensated fairly? What is the correlation between cost of study and career path? How long do experienced professionals stay in the job market? And what metrics really measure employee loyalty? Joining me today is Yinka Wosonya, research lead at IntelPoint, the research and data arm of TechPoint Africa that offers consultancy services to businesses and institutions. We'll be discussing the findings from IntelPoint's recent Nigerian Workspace Report, which is designed to provide valuable insight for those looking to optimize the Nigerian work environment. Now, let's dive into the conversation. So, Yinka, there's this question that is on my mind before we really go into the content of the report, and that's the question of I understand how, at least covering the space for a while now, I know that some conversations about the work industry, especially in this part of the world, are quite sensitive, so you won't find people to talk about them. Remuneration, for instance, I've tried to write articles on remuneration and the use of AI also. I've tried to write articles on the use of AI. And what I've been met with is this kind of reluctance for people to review some of these things. And then I looked at the report. I saw that you interviewed almost 3,000 respondents and they responded. How did you do that?
Yes, getting 2,600 people and how we're able to get them to give the kind of information we wanted. In getting them, so we had to use both online and offline, beyond just sending links to them for people to fill. We also have people on the streets across major cities in the country to ask people to get their information, which we use in the report. In fact, the initial data gathering that we did, we collected up for about 1,008 or thereabout. Analyzing. Let's go back and just have people across the six geopolitical zones that we have in the country, and have like one or two states in each zone. So interview people, have people on these cities, interview people in these selected cities in these states, and that's how we're to get that. And this is not the first time we are doing something similar. We've done it for the fintech report, and now we even was more than this, because that one was basically offline, like it was just mostly offline, and then we interview about 4,000 plus across 35 states plus the FCT, so it's not the first rodeo. So,
yeah, talking about not the first rodeo, you can actually find all IntelPoint reports on, if you go to IntelPoint.co, just type it on in your browser, in your search box, IntelPoint.co, you find many of these reports, the mini ones and the major ones, you find them there. You mentioned that you covered the old geopolitical zone. I noticed that the report covers both employees, employers, HR professionals.
HR professional, it doesn't really do much around the employers.
Well. Yes, so majorly HR professionals.
Like that sense, so HR professionals are like the bridge between the employer and the employee. So having them in the report actually makes it, to some extent, covers the part for the employer. So yeah.
No. Okay. So how did you go about getting these professionals? I can't put this on record, wife. I think HR professionals are not really that easy to reach. Let me just put it that way, right? How did you get them to respond?
Well, you were, Alice, you worked with us on that. But then it's a case of the way we'll present it to them. So you're presenting to them, yes, you're contributing to the industry you are playing in. Mm. So it makes them a stakeholder in the project, rather than just people that are just being interviewed. So I'm interviewing you as, yes, you are not just a stakeholder in your industry, but a stakeholder in this project. Your voice is going to be included in this project. So you are basically just being a part of the project. So basically, so making it that way. So definitely have people respond and, okay, yes, we'd like to share their thoughts and insights about the industry they are playing in.
Yes, cool. No, this is really a big deal for me. And I think Interpoint does major, like mostly big deal reports. This is what I mean. When you consider some industries, they are like, you will sweat before you get data on those industries. Recently, the last report the last major report you released was insurance. And we were talking about it then in this studio. And we talked about how challenging it when it is to get data. And now in the workspace, it's really a big deal for me. I think we can go from there to talk about some data points that stand out to me in the report, right? In the workspace, Nigerian workspace report. Can we start with the how Nigerian employees interact with AI? How open were they to talk about how they use AI for their jobs?
Okay, so one of the questions we are on AI is, yes, AI is at least over the last 1 or 2 years, so the buzz around AI, with AI raising billions of dollars in investment
AI
and stuff
companies.
That, like AI companies rather. So raising that and then AI being part of what we do every day. So we ask the questions, so how do they feel AI? And then, so for that, there are people that say, okay, yes, majority of people, in fact, more than about half of the people we interviewed said they work with AI. They see AI as an ally, something like, okay, yes, if it comes in, we are definitely going to work hand in hand. While other people say, okay, well, they are a bit on the side, maybe it's likely to take their job. But then, consider that.
You think AI will take their job?
Oh, well, this is what it is. So, and some are not sure. So, and this is a take. So, consider that we have at least half of people say they work with AI. I see that as something nice, because yes, they are not that scared. It's okay, yes, it will come, and when it come, they are going to work together. So I believe that's a good thing.
It's nice to know, and this is why I said that, considering that you gather data both offline and online, right? You would have skewed the report if most of the responses were getting, like if all of the responses were getting gotten online. And now the involvement of offline employees means that a lot more people are embracing AI use in the workspace. And I think that's a good movement in the right direction. Another thing I noticed in the report, another data point I noticed in the report, is how employees define what toxic workplace is. Now, I mentioned this because in my previous researches, one argument that comes up is how do you define what is toxic to you? And then when you analyze it and you say, is this really toxic? Or is it just these people, the employers doing their job? So what were some of the things that stood out to you while considering what people consider as toxic behavior in the workplace?
Okay, yeah. So before I go, I had to list some people that... So workplace toxicity is one of the reasons why people said they leave where they are working before.
Mm.
So now, which makes workplace toxicity and... Over the in the last 1 year, we've had stories breaking around workplace toxicity. Okay, yes, this boss is bad, this boss is good, this is such like that, and from both sides of the story. And then, so we included it in the question that we asked. Okay, so what do they actually define by workplace toxicity? And you'd be surprised about what we did. In fact, I don't know if not all that we got that we had to include in the report because of what people said. It because we had to take whatever we didn't give them a predefined
option, so
exactly
question.
Right as many as
in,
you
know. People so, have stories for days.
And then you have cases whereby AAs are working overtime without being compensated as workplace toxicity, and having your boss being the Lord Alpha and Omega, Lord Almighty, and exactly, and you don't have any input, and when you contribute, your input is being ignored or neglected and stuff like that. And then there is remuneration, overworking and stuff like that. So yes, basically there are things so it's maybe the word I should use is subjective, but then because what you consider as workplace toxicity, another person might not consider it as workplace toxicity. So
but some of them are recurring, some of the things, you know, they are
so there are some patterns in it. You see patterns like, of course, overworking without compensation. So you're saying your work time is between 9 to 5, but then as at 7 you're sitting in the office, and this extra 2 hours is not being factored into the remuneration that you're getting at the end of the month. So definitely that's not, because it's eating into your own personal time, and it's not being compensated. So that is like a pattern. And then there is a part of the salary you are getting not commensurate with the time and value you are giving the company. People also consider that as toxicity in the workspace. So
before we even go to that, you know, I think this report, I like this report because, well, data, they say, does not lie. Well, that is contentious. Because they say if you beat data enough, it will confess to a crime it did not commit.
No.
But I think
you
this
can't beat the data into it. This is it. People say that a lot, but then it's just a case of you presenting the data to suit your own agenda. So if, for instance, 10 people, something happened between 10 people, and then 4 of them passed, get A1, for instance. 10 people wrote an exam, 4 of them passed, get A, and the remaining 7 failed. So I can either say 30% passed or 70% failed. So I can just present it in both ways. Okay, 70%, so the failure rate is 70%. So, or I present it possibly 30%. So it's
everybody that is reading to make their conclusions.
Exactly. So it depends on how you present the data. I don't think you can really beat the data. It's just how you
Okay. So sorry to digress there. So what I was going to mention is that this is the data that I will refer to anytime this conversation, this argument of what is workplace toxicity, whenever it comes up, this is the data, like this report is something I would refer to, because yes, these are lived experiences of people about what they consider as workplace toxicity. And if we are being sincere, these are the things that would have come up if say HR professionals or employers actually like speak with these employees to feel their pulse. They would be able to know what grieves them in the work they are doing, and before they escalate to become what is affecting their lifestyle. So do you want to say something?
Yeah, so that brings to another point in the report about, so we ask people what they feel, the HR professionals, what they are which they should how would I put it, they should support, or which
how HR professionals can support them,
can
in
support
the
them. And we have cases whereby people said they feel that the HR professional should be a bridge, they shouldn't be siding with the employer alone. While some said it should be for the employee. So it's just like trying to say, okay, yes, where is the balance?
Yes. Okay. I love that was documented, because I recently had a conversation with an HR professional, and I asked this like question: is the elephant in the room in every HR conversations? Who is the HR for? Right. And it's interesting that employees are expecting that HR should be for them. Meanwhile, management or the employer is expecting that the HR should be for them. as that professional, as that expert I spoke with put it, he said they are just errand boys. So you can't really hold them to it. But it's nice to have that people actually expect support in that aspect that HR professionals should be for them. Yes, let's talk about, this is an interesting conversation because I was having a conversation with someone a few days ago, and the person asked me, what did you study in school? And I mentioned that transport management. And the person was like, what do you do now? Now, this is what happens whenever I get that question. Immediately I answered the, what do you do now? I have to follow up with the story of how I ended up in what I'm doing now. Right? And maybe it's less believable for me, seeing that I'm not really in the cortex space, you know. It's easier for you to just say, oh, I graduated as a biochemist, now I'm a software developer. They just say, okay, you went to go and learn how to code, and then you moved on from there. And then I'm saying, oh, I graduated as a transport manager, and now I'm a journalist. It's difficult to believe. Now, the report actually has a data point that talks about how what people went to study in school correlates with what they are doing now. What was the interesting thing you found out?
So I was actually expecting the discrepancies to be that large. So asking if there's a correlation between their course of study in school and what they are currently doing.
What was the
and surprisingly,
like?
So it's only about 58% are doing what they studied.
Interesting.
I was actually expecting the gap to be wide. Maybe say 30-40% yeah. should be doing what they studied.
While we are in our own bubble.
Exactly. So just look at it like, oh, interesting. So just 58% are doing what they studied in school. And beyond asking them these questions, so we also verify. So look at what you said you studied in school, and we look at what you are currently doing, what you say you are currently doing.
Mm-hmm.
Does it allow you to realize? Yes, if it doesn't, so we try and make sure that, okay, just we that. Clean exactly oh. to clean. So beyond just taking what it for say? What you said, oh. yeah, we ask you, but we still try to make sure that we verify the data you are giving us.
Cool.
So but then it's surprising that only 58% said they are doing what they
but
study.
Imagine it's really close. I won't be surprised if you took more data, like if you question more people, if it will tilt to the side of I'm not working with what I studied.
It might.
And it's an interest. It's lovely that it's documented, because I'm thinking of the different ways I've used this report to argue.
all our reports have always been a source of argument. Last week on Twitter, I was again about salary remuneration, and someone just picked up something from our report, posted it, and
then the okay, jobs mic.
No, that's just because I say, okay, this is it. I just put the source there, yeah. But you don't want to argue with. So it's now learning for you to come and say, now let me now argue with Interpoint. How do you get your data as just like us?
There was this thing you mentioned when we were talking, like two questions back, where you talked about the correlation between what people are getting paid compared to the value they are offering. What did you find out about how people get paid compared to the value of what they are paid?
Okay, they are doing rather. So we did not separate whether
they are
working on startup, because to a very large extent, that line is very, it's blurry.
Okay.
If I said I'm working in a startup, so you are taking it as if yes, it's my startup. But both if it's actually not a startup, that I see it's a traditional company or a company that has been on for say 15-20 years, and then beyond that, we are not asking people for some specifics that we can use and say this. So exactly. But then what we see it, so there's really no major pattern as to the correlation between what people are earning and the value that they are giving this company. So take people earning below 100k, for instance. Only 52 of them said yes, it's not commensurate. 52% of those earning less than 100k said it's not commensurate with what they are doing.
Okay.
And then on the upper, no, it's even so, it's not, there's no trend. So it's not like the upper you go. So there are cases where you get to a point where, so take between 400 to 500, those earning between 400 to 450k now. 64% said what they are earning is commensurate with the value they're giving a company. And then when you go above, everyone that are earning 600 to 650 said the amount they are earning is not commensurate with
are
the value.
Are you kidding? This data is funny because
so you see, okay, it's there's no trend as it goes up. No. So as you go up, so you have some that said no, this thing is not commensurate. Then you go a little higher, it says something else. You go a little higher, it's another thing.
Okay, so it will have understandable for people if that are earning less than 250 or 300
to say it's not commensurate.
But 600 to 750. Excuse me, what are you waiting for? No, that for you to be any that you're probably in a senior role or that in a management position.
Well, you might not be. Depends on the industry you are in, because overall, people in financial services are earning more than other industries.
Mm.
Yes. So if you are
the money is if you are God, I just got a remnant. You see where the money is.
So if you are in the financial industry, you are likely to earn more than those in other industries. So there's financial industry, then also services. So those two industries are earning more than any other. So you might be
in education. Oh Lord.
So education is probably one of the lowest ones. Education is probably one of the lowest ones. But then for services and financial services, mm-hmm. So those are people in that. So you might not be in the top level for you to do upward of 600, 700. Mm-hmm. But then the fact that there's no trend in the higher the salary the higher the salary, and you're saying yes, there's a correlation between that and how people are satisfied with what they are getting. People that earn higher and I say no, I deserve more than
more
this.
And
people that earn it, I say yes, this is what I deserve.
That's interesting. Did you find out how long? Well, the years of experience, like if there's a correlation between the years of experience and the positions that people occupy.
So what we did was their experience level. So we asked people to grade themselves their experience level.
Okay.
And how much they are earning. So you're saying this is what you're earning and this is your experience level.
What did you discover?
So you see people that said they are experienced. So we have we have four stages.
Okay.
There's a senior, there's a junior. Yeah, we have junior, there's a senior, there's mid-level, and then there's expert. I think expert is the highest one.
Okay.
And then you have people that said they are an expert and they are doing less than 200K.
Whoa.
And
okay, did you
and you have people in junior level that are doing upward of 400.
Okay, let's think about it this way. Okay, let me tell you now, as when you're working in tech, now you were talking about education is the least paid industry. If you're a level 17 officer, like principal level in a Unity school, for instance,
I don't think you do up to 400.
Now, as of say 5 years ago, you're probably doing around 250, 300.
5 years ago, there's still no difference between what's happening 5 years ago. Is it not recently that they just increased the minimum wage? I don't think they have even implemented it.
So if you're level 16, for instance.
So you're likely not going to do about 500.
500. Now, okay. So now if you're a junior developer in a tech industry, your minimum is probably 250, 300. So I understand. I think I understand where the discrepancies is coming from now.
So
people that consider themselves
experts,
why are you
earning
less?
I think we even have experts that say they are doing less than 150K.
Whoa. Now, this was a concern when I checked the report, and I have to speak with an HR professional for this. You will find the person's comment, the expert's comment in the report when you get it. But there was this thing that she mentioned. She said, while we can agree that these discrepancies come from industries, the expert themselves needs to know what their value is, right? As it were, we might say that, there's money in the financial sector, there's money in the tech space. Whatever it is you do in the conventional space, in the corporate space, and you feel you've reached an expert level and the money you're getting paid does not correlate with the years of experience, you can pivot. You can pivot to industries where you believe you'll be appreciated, because you cannot say, so it's either one of two problems. You either cannot assess yourself well to know which level you belong to. Maybe you are just mid-level and you consider yourself a expert. You get, or a senior. So it's either that or you are getting underpaid and it's time to jump ship or pivot, right?
And I believe it's stuff like that that this report will eventually address later. So I'm looking at myself. Okay, yes, I've done this so years. This is my experience level. This is how much I should earn. Because there's still no data to say this is how much a senior should earn. You just have to ask your friend, oh, how much are you earning? If they want to tell you, or look at a few people have posted or said they've earned, and use that as a benchmark or a baseline to say, okay, yes, I should be earning between this and this. So there's really no data around that. But then stuff like this is saying, okay, yes, you are this. This is what people in your field are earning. This is what the highest person is earning. This is what the lowest person is. So you have a range to work with when you are negotiating your pay. So
yes, and this is why resources like this are very important. Download this report. You'll be able to see what other people in your industry are earning, at least an idea, and you know how you should like negotiate pay. One thing I want us to go into now is the unemployment. Unemployment is, yes, I think we still have like reasonable or to an extent fair data to the unemployment rate in the country, or the employment rate, and you can
they've skewed that data.
The data has been skewed.
Yeah, I mean, skew is not the right word. They've kind of like manipulated the data.
Okay, so we can't trust that. Let's trust what Interpoint wants to give us. So now, I think Inka should just mention what they found out. So it's like the higher your years of experience, the more you stay before you get a job. I don't know if I found if my deduction is right.
Yeah, something around that. So there's a question around how long they've been job searching. So, and surprisingly, you have people that are even look at it. So people that have a higher degree, like more of them are still. So it's not, there's no correlation between whether it's a question of education or your, so there's, it has nothing to do. So just across board, so whether it's just SSC or the first degree or even ND, NC, or BSc, HND, or even second degrees, PhD. So there is really no correlation to say, okay, yes, getting a second degree, it's likely to get you no, because it's spread across.
I might use this one to argue. People that say, do your master's so I can get a job.
It's spread across all the education level, irrespective of whether you have,
and even years of experience too. So there's really no correlation between that. The unemployment, really, the employment, or the job market is not fair to anybody.
Yeah, but the another interesting part about the years would be the age of the employed people and how long they stay with the company. So you see that the older people get,
the more stable they are in the place. What are you looking for everywhere?
The higher they are likely to stay with the company. So see, people less than 25 are doing highest 2 years with the company
before they leave.
And then you see as they go from 25 and they get to 30, so you start seeing the increase. You start seeing people staying upward of three years, 4 years, and then it gets to 40 years. You see that as they get older, they stay longer in the company. So you have people that stayed in the same company for those 20 years.
Lifers, yes, they are the lifers. Interest. So, what I'm getting from here is that while you are still young, job up as much as possible, because a time will come where you just crave stability and say, let me just stay here, right? So I think I understand the the reason why young people don't have that much patience to stay at a workplace for long. There are exemptions, though. Inka, how long have you been in your workplace?
It's more like 60 or 70.
Wow. It's 7. It should be 7. It cannot be 60. Can you imagine?
No, wait, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24. Wow.
Yes, 7.
7.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
So, 7
so there are exemptions, and Yinka is not even 40 yet. He might be pushing 40 though.
I'm
but
not pushing 40. Why?
Meanwhile, yes. So what I'm trying to say is that the older people get, the more stable, the more loyal they are. Maybe it's not a factor of loyalty. Maybe it's just like they just want stability and they just stay in a place.
There are other factors to that beyond loyalty and stability. So I don't know. This might just be like a PR for TechPoint, but then working with TechPoint and the other companies that I've worked with. So there is a sharp difference in the employee-employer relationship, in how you work, how you take ownership of your own work and stuff like that. So it gives you a kind of a sense that working in another place might not give you. So I believe that's one of the reasons that contributed to me still being here. In my 7th
years,
in
my 7th
year, I'm counting. Okay.
I have to be like when I grow
maybe
up.
I'm counting. So yeah, I don't know if the age is there, but then I just believe it's because of the work environment and stuff like that. So yeah.
It would have been nice to find the correlation between people that actually mentioned the reason they would want to leave a company or they left a company that pinned it on workplace culture and people that stay long in the company. I don't know if
There is actually no except if it's a case of to go and look into that, into the data later, mm-hmm. and try and come up with
this is a call to action to companies. And you know, sometimes maybe when you are older you just feel like, oh, I can endure anything they are throwing at me. But the younger you are, the less don't let me say, I don't want to use any of those words, the less than ideal situation you want to find yourself, right? I think we can just round up with this particular question. There's this force around salary, competitive salary as it were. I realized, or I found out in this report, that there was a focus on non-monetary benefits and how it can actually help employers to retain talent. Did anything stand out for you when it comes to those benefits?
Aside the fact that health insurance take the lead in terms of the non-monetary benefits that companies are giving their employees. So there are also cases of the number of non-monetary benefits that these employees are getting. So some are getting as much as 6 to 7 non-monetary benefits, and you are talking health insurance, gym subscription. Some even go as high as subsidizing their transportation. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a car, you get a company owned car, or you are using public transport, so you get subsidized either way. And you have education support where you're taking a course and the company just foot the bill and stuff like that. So yes, so you have that. But then the surprising thing is that there's actually no much correlation between that and how long people stay in a company. So that you still get these benefits doesn't really say, okay, yes, people will still say. So it's still... The company is just a whole lot of factors beyond just a remuneration and stuff like that.
Or
what you're using and supporting, exactly.
But I want to push the narrative.
Okay. No, yeah, but then it's something that looks nice, because if you are beyond your salary, you are getting some other things to cushion the effect of
the economy.
Definitely, people want to say, okay, yes, this is something I want to do.
Right. Huh. And you will think we've covered everything in this report, but that is just like maybe 30% of what the report covered.
Not up to that.
It's not even up to 30%. Can you imagine? So you would want to get this report. Yes, and I would like to stop here because I don't want to drag this longer. There are lots of things that you learn from that report, not just as an employer, but as an employee, as a professional. As long as you're interacting with the work industry, right? Thank you, Yinka, for joining me today in the studio.
Thank you for having me.
I can't wait to have you back here, give it another banger.
Looking forward to that.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. To be the first to access the report, use the link in the show notes. For more workplace-related content, head over to techpoint.africa/subject/work. All other relevant links will be included in the show notes as well. Don't forget to share your comments and suggestions by reaching out to us at mwc@techpoint.africa. Catch you in the next one.